let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some arse.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma, Stephen and Kristen, proudly sponsored this month by Auckland Council's Creative Communities. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Now tonight we're catching up with the team from Flyleaf Theatre's production of An Enemy of the People. We then head to Wellington to chat with Jackson on his award-winning verbatim show Over and Out before the studio gets loud as the band No Strangers plays live in studio. Now this week we saw the sad passing of three creative icons in New Zealand. Of course, number one, Sam Neill. And, you know, I loved Jason Gunn's comments this week where he said, thank you for reminding us that you don't have to stop being a decent, humble human just because the whole world knows your name. Very sad to see Sam's passing. And President of Napier Operatic Society, Donna Briggs, passed away this week, an inspiring leader, a hard worker and an amazing mentor in the arts in Hawke's Bay. So much love to the Hawke's Bay community this week. And finally, Robert Whittemu, musical director of the New Zealand Youth Choir, artistic advisor and trustee for Cairns. He's toured the world as a singer, including with the BBC Singers. His music, his teaching, his philosophy will be his legacy. So we thought tonight to start the show off in his honour. Here he is singing with the New Zealand Youth Choir, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. Love to Robert's family at this challenging time and to those in Hawke's Bay and, of course, the fabulous Sam Neill. What a week of stars heading to Angels, Kristen.
Wow.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We're only guessing tonight where Emma is. We know she was last seen, it was in Queenstown. Actually, she on her way to Aussie?
I don't know, but I think she did experience the earthquake. So we know that she was there. At least she said it was a bit crazy, and we sent her our best.
Yeah, yeah. Heading off, I think next is the Junior Festival over in Australia for her busy, busy time of the year.
She's incredible.
Now, we are going to rock straight into it because we have got a very busy night tonight, and we are absolutely delighted to welcome to the studio the team from Flyleaf Theatre Company's production of An Enemy of the People heading to Q Theatre. Welcome Fraser, Grace and Joseph.
Kia ora.
Thank you.
Great to have you all here. Thanks for bringing your energy in on a Sunday night.
Yeah. Good.
Now, Grace, you're going to kick it off. For our audience listening, what is An Enemy of the People all about?
An Enemy of the People is all about a small town around the Canterbury area. It's got a family element and it's got a political element, and they have an eco spa that they have created for the tourism to bring money into the town, and they discover that something in the water isn't quite what is needing to be there. It could be dangerous, and they are trying to solve the problem, but they run into a few battles and a few people with some opinions, and they sort of talk about what the right thing to do is versus what might the costly thing to do. But at the end of the day, you know, what's more important? Is it people's health or is it money and political power?
Sounds good. Now, Joseph, this is not the original story, though, is it? This is a bit of a reimagining, would you say?
It's not the original story, but it never is. And what I mean by that is Ibsen wrote it in 1882, and it was controversial then when he wrote it. And ever since then, when it was done in the UK, it was a Scottish version, and they did an Australian version and a Greek version, and it just appeared on the West End and in Broadway in 2024, and it was set in that particular in a different context then. And when you really talk about the plot being a small spa town that discovers that their water supply is contaminated, and there's some political pushback and some journalistic trouble reporting it, that sounds like a contemporary New Zealand story. And credit to Aaron Richardson of Flyleaf Theatre. He is the adapter of the play. And I think he's made a tight and shiny little piece of theatre that speaks, that does justice to the original work, but speaks to modern day Kiwis.
I guess that was going to be my next question, Fraser, is, you know, how much of the original text needs to be in there when you're adapting, or is it simply the themes remain the same, but it's a whole new script?
It depends, really. I think as we've gone on in our process, there was more original text in the script, and then once we actors all get our hands on it, we like to fiddle around and change things to feel more natural for us. So it's ended up being quite contemporary in the language, but there is still a lot of the DNA of the old stuff there. But the themes and the characters, a few characters have been amalgamated, but on the whole, for what we've got, it feels still like the original, but it is also very contemporary in its style.
And very topical, isn't it, Kristen? Because wasn't it the last year or two, there's been a few towns in New Zealand that have had major water issues in particular. Was it Hawke's Bay last year?
Yeah, and I think that it happens, well, now it's been happening kind of all over the world, so it's very relatable for anybody, not just Kiwis, to come to see this to say, okay, could this be happening? What would happen? Not to alarm anybody. It's not, you know, necessarily this isn't a news article. It is an imagining. Yeah, I'm very surprised that it was written in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. 1880s.
Incredible. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so tell us about your characters, Grace. Who do you play?
So I play Catherine Stockman. She is the wife of Thomas Stockman. She has a newborn baby. She has uprooted her life to support her husband on his endeavors, and she's a teacher, and she's just navigating being a new mum and and the relationship and the marriage that I think sometimes isn't at its peak. Everybody has their problems. It's about survival for her, and I also think it's about putting yourself first. And yeah, what are you willing to give up, and what are you willing to hold on to? Where's that line?
What have you enjoyed most about this character?
I've really enjoyed, well, I've found the interesting part navigating when I feel that you're an energetic actor and you're sort of trying to, you know, fill the space, fill the time. And we've sort of been exploring what does the silence and the quiet moments look like. We've just being, and how would that look like for someone who's really tired, who has just gone through, you know, having a baby and sort of navigating these people always in her house and, you know, performing, but at the same time when they're gone, you know, really, really giving into that exhaustion. It's an interesting juxtaposition, I suppose, to go through. A lot of the characters I normally play are quite energetic, so this has been really interesting sort of examining how does a tired person look like on stage that doesn't look like just, you know, void of energy.
Interesting. Okay, all right. Fraser, who do you play?
I play Thomas Stockman, who is the resident environmental scientist of the town. He's the one who discovers the issue with the water. And Catherine is his wife. And the story is about him navigating his relationship to the truth and what everyone else in the town, including his brother, who is the mayor, tell him is the best course of action. It's been an exciting process. It's been a big chunk of text to learn, which is great. I love getting stuck into that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's been really fun.
Would that be one of your biggest challenges in this journey?
No, not necessarily. The learning of the text has been quite... I mean, I'm very lucky that I have other great actors to work with, so getting up and doing the reps and learning the lines is not difficult. But Thomas is quite an energetic character. Speaking about energy, there's a lot going on at all times. There's thoughts changing constantly, you know. So it's been a good challenge to have big chunks of text, but to find ways to make them, you know, interesting and compelling and real, that don't just sound regurgitated and, like I just recite all my memorized lines that I've spent ages.
Yeah, like he's forming new thoughts all the time.
Yes, and he really is. So it's it's good fun to explore that.
Is that different than the characters that you've played before?
Not really, but it is because it's quite a large part, I think, is part of the challenge is going. It's not, you know, four scenes, it's five acts, so it's at the goal is much further away, you know, but exciting. Yeah.
How do you keep that energy up and keep it fresh? Like, do you have like a little mantra you say? Do you step aside and, you know, refocus? Like, what's how do you make that fresh?
I don't have a mantra. I should get one. I should get something. But no, I honestly, it's once I'm on stage and I'm with the other people, then it's not hard to keep the energy up. It's starting, I think, that's the hard bit for me. But once we're there, once I'm away, I'm fine.
Amazing.
And Joseph, who do you play?
I play Hobson, who is the editor of the town paper.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. And what's he discovering during this journey?
He's discovering what I'm discovering is when Thomas reveals that our water is contaminated, Hobson feels like there's a pretty simple moral imperative there. I'm the editor of the paper. The paper needs to tell the news, needs to inform the people, speak truth to power. And then throughout the course of the play, he's confronted with the cost of how much this is going to cost the community, of how much the community is not going to appreciate things like a double-digit rates rise. And his resolve is tested and eventually crumbles. And that's a really interesting journey to go through, to start with a character who is very morally certain and then just have that fall apart in a very, I think for an audience, interesting and satisfying way. And I credit to Grace Augustine, I think the thing that makes it doubly interesting across the board is, and this is true of Ibsen's work as well, every relationship in the play, aside from its type and its place in society, we have the mayor and the editor and the doctor. Every one of those people has a personal relationship to the point where the doctor and the mayor are brothers. And it's this wonderful grounding that our director, Grace Augustine, has really kept bringing us back to of underneath your job, you have a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's a small town.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know this person from whatever context. That's a part of what's happening in your communication as well. And it makes it very, very much a safe space to slot into as an actor, to go, oh, I know you, I'm comfortable with you as the actor and as the character, until the characters stop being comfortable with each other, and then they get really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Fraser, I see there's Seven in the cast, and this is in Q Theatre's loft space.
Yes.
That's a tight space
it
to
is
have
tight space.
Seven of you working. How is that sort of working for you guys?
So we are performing in the Traverse, which means we've got audience on two sides.
Oh, great.
Yes,
great.
Audience on two sides, long stage. So that's actually been a fun challenge.
Yeah,
it's been having
cool.
this
Ooh, yeah.
long space to play with. I mean, it's been great for me, as we say, Thomas is high energy, so running from one end of the stage to another is awesome. And having, yeah, being able to get everybody in there with our little minimal set as well.
Yeah, I would just add to that, like the the set is very simple, but we have to be constantly aware of which ways we are facing and making sure every actor is showing or every side of the audience is getting at least one perspective at a time. And I think that's been really interesting because normally, you know, you sort of, it's all about don't have your back to the audience. But in this case, you're always going to have your back
to
someone.
At some point,
So
one of my favourite directing moments over the years has been a couple of times I've directed theatre in the round. I just love it. It's such a challenge as a director. But actually, it's really fun too because it makes you really think outside the square and how you stage it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm pleased to hear you doing it that way. We went and saw Oranges there a couple of weeks ago and I really hope that they've cleaned the floor. I'll just leave that as a statement before you guys go in there.
That might be good. With the contaminated water, though, right?
Oh, a bit of a mess on the floor.
Orange
as well.
Smells coming through.
Nice. Yes. So tell us a little bit about Flyleaf Theatre Company. Who can tell us a bit about who are these guys?
I can tell you a little bit about it. I did St. Joan last year, which was a big hit and a big success, and very pleased with it. The brain trust behind Flyleaf is our director, Grace Augustine, Aaron Richardson, who is our adapter, and Charlie Underhill, who is an angel of a producer. And sort of the modus operandi for the theater is to bring classical works to New Zealand, starting with George Bernard Shaw, St. Joan last year, and now Henrik Ibsen this year. I don't know what their plans are next year, but I'm very excited for it. So far, so good. Their work is very, very deep. It's a longer rehearsal process. It's a very thorough rehearsal process with a lot of text work and a lot of exercise and grounding, and it's been great.
And in that rehearsal process, because of the sort of, I guess, readaption of it, is it very much got that devised feel with the script as well, or is Aaron coming and going, no, I'm locking this bit in? Like, how does that work?
No, I think it's devising would be the key word. We've went away and we all did some research questions to make sure it's very easy with a play like that for everyone to be living in different worlds. But we have to make sure that we're all in the same world. We're, you know, not doing caricatures. We're playing these real people. And we've done some Chekhov stuff and we have had some other people coming in and we've done a lot of improv. Because the play is set over 3 days, we don't have a lot of information about their backstories necessarily. It's all sort of about the drama that happens. So we've all had to be on the same page of, okay, our characters, how do they know each other? What relationship do they have? What does a day in the life of look like? This person's at my house. Are they normally at that house? Like, all those things that inform how you feel about another character on stage. And we've been openly discussing it. And the great thing about Grace and Aaron and Charlie is that they are wanting it to be our work just as much as their work. And so they make the floor really open and they encourage us and they always say, you know your characters better than we do, so you tell us what it is and we'll just kind of work like that. So there aren't any wrong answers. It's your instinct.
That's cool.
And it's awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's incredibly collaborative. It's been amazing.
Yeah, there have been a few points that are sticky within the adaptation to say what's happening at this point. And we want to be very, very precise. And the ability of everyone in the room to go, all right, let's talk about it. Let's get it up on its feet and try it. Still haven't found the answer? Okay, we'll try it again tomorrow. Mm. And that much runway is really a gift.
Yeah. And often having everybody in the rehearsal space at all times, which has actually been godsend, to be honest. Obviously, barring people having things going on in their lives that they can't be there, but having all the characters and all the actors, no matter how big or small, in parentheses, I hate describing things like that, but you understand what I mean. Like, having everybody there means that we're all equal as creatives, which is really nice, I think. And so somebody can, if you're stuck on something, like Joseph says, we're on a sticky bit, someone who's not even involved often is the person who goes, why don't you just do that?
Outside eye.
Of course. And it's really nice.
For example, there's a bit of information that makes it out into the town. And we had to think, well, how does this information actually get out? Because this isn't, back when Henrik written it. So we thought, okay, well, what would happen nowadays? It would probably be social media or something like that. And then we had to create that. So really looking in the world. And so I think someone else came up with that wasn't even in the scene. So,
brilliant.
Really collaborative.
Brilliant. It's great.
All right, we're going to take a short music break and then we're going to unpack your arts journeys. The fabulous artist Star released some new music earlier this year. It's called When You're Around.
On a rainy cloud, there's grey clouds in my bedroom, feeling sorry for myself. As I dwell in doubt, you just pull me out. Where my day would be without you by my side, feeling sorry for myself. You can guarantee when it's you and me, I'm alright. Oh, hey, you put a skip in my step, got me feeling my best. And when you say you are.
star when you're around. Now, our dear friend Rebecca has emailed in to remind our listeners that Night of the Queer at Victor's Cabaret, a new cabaret spot just off Taylor's Road in Morningside, is about to kick off. After 2 years, Night of the Queer returns reimagined and with a bold new home at Victor's. Since its inception in 2015, Night of the Queer has been a dazzling fixture of the Auckland Pride Festival, celebrating the depth, brilliance and diversity of queer artistry across Auckland. Blending nostalgia with fresh work, this latest alliteration brings together a dynamic ensemble of dancers, drag artists and multidisciplinary performers in a bold celebration of queer excellence. From high energy dance and aerial artistry to sassy song, striking burlesque and unapologetic drag, the show transforms the space into a world where audiences are invited not just to watch, but to feel, connect and ultimately move. Now, it's taking place from the 23rd of July, so it's opening this week, through until the 2nd of August in its new home in Taylor's Road in Morningside. Head to TicketTaylor.com. That's a new one, TicketTaylor.com, for Night of the Queer. Thanks, Rebecca. Good luck with the season. Now, back to our guests here in the studio, talking about An Enemy of the People, and that's kicking off on the 12th of August at Q Theatre. If we now chat to you a little bit about your arts journey, and Joseph, you're no stranger to kick arts.
Yeah.
So take us back. When did you first kick off in the arts world?
Oh, God. As a kid, I started doing plays because I was painfully shy, and there was a teacher that got me into a play, and I discovered it was kind of... if you can get over the fact that there are people looking at you, it's an incredibly safe space in that you know exactly what you're supposed to say, you know exactly how everyone's going to respond to what you say, you know where you're supposed to be standing, and you know when you get to leave. And it ended up being a thing that I enjoyed very much. I was a youngster with a rich inner life, and that ended up being something that I knew I wanted to do very early. I ended up going to Northwestern University, dropping down into Chicago, and started working professionally in 1990, and worked there, based out of Chicago, for 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And New Zealand is now home.
And New Zealand is now home. I moved here with my family in 2013, and we've been making art here ever since we arrived. So
brilliant. What would you say would be one of the biggest sort of points of difference from here versus home?
Chicago is a theater town. When I was there, the League of Chicago Theaters had 200 member houses.
Wow.
Which meant you never produced anything from scratch. If you had a project, you went to an existing house and you said, is this something you would like to have? And if you didn't, you moved on to the next house and shopped it to them. Whereas in Auckland, not so much a theater town. It's much smaller, much less disposable income for art. Mm. And so you're building a lot of things from the ground up. And there's no shade in that. It's just, I think anytime you move to a new city, it's local. How do you make art?
Mm.
In a lot of ways, Auckland is a lot more of an on-camera town than Chicago was when I was there. It became more of an on-camera town after I left. Thanks, Chicago, for that. Yeah, it's been a really nice journey here in Auckland to explore the corners and find out, okay, who's making theater?
Mm.
And it's been lovely.
When did you last head home?
I was back there 2 years ago, and my family is, I have a son in New York that we got out to see and friends in Chicago, and we traveled far and wide, but did get to go back to Chicago and see a lot of the old theater friends. Which was terrific. I still actually do some work with a few of them remotely. I have a friend who does audiobooks, and one of the voices in his stable. So I produce those for him.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Amazing. Cool. Is the rest of your family, are they into the arts as well?
Not at all.
Oh, so it's just
my,
you.
My parents were public school teachers. And my one brother is an IT manager for a pharmaceutical company, and my twin brother is a mechanical engineer. And
wow.
So I'm the weirdo in the group. And that's okay.
Brilliant. Love it. Love it. All right. Grace, take us back. When did you first kick some arts into your life?
Well, I sort of grew up, you know, loved the costumes, loved the ballet, loved all the things that you could get dressed up for. And then when I was in high school, I just really, really enjoyed drama class. And I loved, I had my teacher, and honestly, it never occurred to me to do anything else. I don't know if I was a little bit delirious, but when it came to applying for university, I just thought drama school, obviously. You know, I've never considered doing anything else. And so, yeah, I mean, it's the thing I love the most. I've been fortunate enough to do my teaching certificate as well. So I'm also a primary school teacher, but I, yeah, it's allowed me to follow the dream and sort of figure out what that looks like and where that is. I was in London for a couple of years doing theatre over there and have since come back. And yeah, it's been awesome. I love it. I cannot believe not everyone wants to do it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, oh yeah, guaranteed income would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
more parts for you.
Yeah. So story time in your classroom is pretty impressive.
Oh yes. We are very big in the singing and the dancing and the everything. And I think, especially because I'm with the juniors, I think it's really important for them to learn early on that, you know, expression is wonderful and it's okay, and being silly, and, you know, there's a real, you can see it with little kids. It's really, they're all naturally want to do it as well. And it's sort of, yeah, just honing in on that and making sure that they feel comfortable and, yeah, quirky. I love it.
Yeah. I love it. I once got in, well, not in trouble, but there was a moment. I was teaching a group of teachers in a training college, I won't name it, and I was running an interactive drama and theatre workshop with primary school teachers and what they could do in their classroom around stories. And one person chose to just go and sit in the corner. And I said, oh, can I ask what you're doing? She said, oh, I won't do any of this with my classes, so I'll just sit out of this. And I said, oh, are you going to be teaching in primary school? She said, yep, yeah. I said, well, I've got multiple hats on. Right now, my hat is your teacher, but I'm also a parent of two children in primary school, and I'm also a board chair of a primary school. So, A, never come and apply for a job in my school, and B, as a parent, I never want you teaching my kids, because I want my kids to play for as long as they can in life. I want them to have fun. I want them to experience the arts.
Absolutely.
And if you can't give me 2 hours now, I really worry what you're going to be like.
Yeah.
In a primary school, the entire room applauded.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And Emily, she had sat out of quite a few things, and the lecturer at the end said, I've never been able to deal with it quite confronting like you did, because you're a guest, but thank you. And I was like, no, that was serious. I want primary kids to play. Life is so serious for so long.
Absolutely. And all the learning that happens through, you know, storytelling and singing and movement, and it's all learning. It's all there, just because it's not necessarily, you know, pen to paper, but it all has to work together.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. All right. Fraser, take us back. When did you first kick off?
I was actually saying this to you guys outside. I saw Lord of the Rings when I was 8, as many of us did. And basically I said to my parents, oh, how do I do that? And they said, well, you can't do that. And I said, well, I want to run around with a sword and ride horses
and get paid for
run
it.
Through the mountains. Yeah. And they went, how do I do that for a job?
Yeah.
And they went, oh, I guess you could be an actor. And I was like, well, that's it. And then I think from that day on, I was like, I'm going to be an actor. And I had no idea what that meant, of course. And then go through school and you do all the musicals and all of that, and then realise there's a whole lot more to learn than getting to run around with a sword and try to ride horses and run up mountains. But it was, yeah.
But that paid well for those ones, didn't
it? Well,
yeah, yes.
But, yes, it's, yeah, kind of like Grace. I think once I'd made the decision, I never really thought of anything else. It was just, it was always, yeah.
Which sounds a bit wanky, but, like, it, yeah.
No, but it's like, yeah, it's like, that's what, you know, I always say to my wife, I go, I really wish that I was deeply, deeply passionate about, like, being an accountant or being a builder or being a cop or being something the same way that I am about being an actor, but I'm just not, or you know, a creative. So, yeah, it was a pretty simple decision for me, kind of come what may, you know.
Love it. All right, we're nearly out of time, so I'm going to throw a real curly at you to finish the show. If a producer walked in the door right now and offered you your dream role, not this show, your next show, this one's wrapped, what would your dream role could be, even if it's one that realistically you might go, I can't play that age anymore or gender or whatever, you just, this is it, this is the one you've always wanted to play?
I was actually thinking about this recently. About half of my early resume was all Shakespeare companies. Mm-hmm. And so I've done about half the canon. And for the longest time, I just had no interest in Richard. I've done Richard, but playing other characters, but I've never wanted to do Richard until, like, the past 2 years. I think it was more, it came into my mind, wait, I know how I would do Richard. And so that's my answer, is I would love at this point in my life to do a Richard III.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, awesome. Richard III. Okay, Grace?
I'm going to float off the back of that and go Queen Margaret.
Okay. Nice. There's a trend in the room.
Oh, she's just powerhouse, and it would be really interesting to explore that, and especially because lots of the Shakespeare that's sort of happening at the moment has been set a bit more modern, and sort of looking at that, and yeah, what does strong woman today look like with the language being used from all those years ago? Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Lucky last.
I have to say Macbeth.
Wow.
But in the interest of doing adaptation, I'll adapt a film, and I'm not normally this interesting. It's only because I've just watched it. I would adapt Lawrence of Arabia, and I'd play Lawrence of Arabia because that's an incredible role.
But you've got a musical theatre background as well. So Lawrence the Arabia from Arabia. Lawrence of Arabia, the musical.
Imagine. I'd do it.
I'd watch. I'd come and see.
Put me in the robes. Oh,
brilliant.
Amazing.
Brilliant. Awesome, guys. Hey, good luck with An Enemy of the People. Joseph, tell us, when's it on? Where can people get tickets and all that important stuff, and when, perhaps how they can find out more about Flyleaf Theatre Company?
Sure thing. It is going to be going from August 12th to August 22nd at the Q Loft. You can find out all the information about it at qtheatre.co.nz. And if you go to the What's On section and you scroll down, you'll find us right there. You can buy the tickets there, or you can buy the tickets straight through iTickets, and we wanted to shout out, there is a special Choose What You Pay Day.
Yes, tell us about that.
August 13th, recognizing that times are hard and wanting to get people in to see and support the arts. On that particular day, August 13th, the 7:30 show, you can choose to pay as low as $15 if that's what you can afford. There'll be a little slider when you go in to buy your tickets, or if you do have means and you love the arts and you'd really like to support this particular company, you can go as high as $100.
Nice.
That's not going to be the case for everybody, but it's an option.
Yeah.
But we did want to shout out the one particular. There is the Choose What You Pay Day, which is August 13th.
Brilliant. And can people track Flyleaf down online?
I believe they can, but I don't remember their website.
That's okay. Do a search. It's bound to be there. Otherwise, head to qtheatre.co.nz. 12th to the 22nd of August. Walking distance from your place and my place, so we better go and check them out and support them.
100%. 100%.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming in tonight, guys. All the best with your season.
Thank you so much.
Awesome to have you. Going to take a music break now, and then we're heading to Wellington to chat with Jackson. Now, Kristen and I caught Catch Me If You Can yesterday with the Selwyn Community Arts Theatre putting it on. Here's a great song that we love from it called Seven Wonders.
I've seen the seven wonders, if you give or take a few. But all them seven wonders, well, they can't compare to you. Been a lot of places, yes, I've traveled near and far, but now I know that home is where you are. Niagara Falls, a leaky faucet,
what?
Yeah, that a plumber ought to fix. The pyramids, really just a dusty pile of bricks.
Really?
The Taj Mahal, a fixer-upper. The Grand Canyon, just a hole.
Oh, no.
The Grand Canal in Venice, an Italian toilet bowl.
That's wrong.
I've seen the seven wonders, if you give or take a few. But all them seven wonders, well, they can't compare to you. In a lot of places, yes, I've traveled near and far, but now I know that home is where you are.
Okay. The Aurora Borealis. just a nightlight on the Fritz.
And Stonehenge?
It's just a bunch of rocks.
La Brea is tar.
The pits.
How about the Leaning Tower of Pisa?
Looks like something up and broke.
Mount Rushmore!
Someone climb up there and tell them, boys, a joke. Get the check, I'll pay the bill. 'Cause I see all the wonders with your eyes. Just standing still.
The clock's ticking, Brenda. I can't. I don't want to be a doctor forever. I want to make a home with you.
I've been a lot of places, but I've learned. There's no need to roam, 'cause home is where you are.
There's no need to roam, 'cause home is where you are.
Yes, now I know that home is where you are.
Done to the Selwyn Community Theatre team for putting on Catch Me If You Can. It was great to see such a large cast on stage.
It was amazing. The dancing, the costumes. It was a big show, and that's a big stage. Mm. And I think they could have gone bigger. It was fantastic, and you could tell they were, especially the dancers, had to change their costumes and their whole persona from showgirl to nurses to, you know, it was. And we were just talking about the lead, too, how from vulnerable boy to, you know, kind of mischievous and devious, but it was charming and very fabulous.
Yeah. There is so much theatre happening at the moment, especially up here in Auckland. We've got a very full show tonight, so we're not going to be able to read off the big list, but you can check it out, of course, on our website, kickarts.org.nz, and also if you head to thetheatrelist.com, sign up there and you'll get your weekly roundup of Auckland Theatre in a simple email every Sunday night. It's just come out. It tells you everything that's coming up over the next few weeks, so head to thetheatrelist.com. Now, we are delighted now to chat with the fabulous Jackson Burling about the award-winning verbatim theatre show Over and Out, described as a funny, heartfelt solo work. It's created and performed by Jackson and directed by Simon Leary. It's playing for one night in Wellington before coming up here to Auckland. Good evening, Jackson. How are you?
Hey, kia ora. Yeah, I'm doing really well.
Great to have you back on Kick Arts. Now, tell us a little bit about Over and Out. What's it all about?
Yeah, that rhymes as well, which is awesome. Over and Out, yeah, where to begin? It's a solo verbatim theatre show based on the question of why shouldn't I have become a truck driver? I come from a family of truck drivers, and when thinking of what I could be doing other than acting, that is something that I could have done. And so Over and Out is essentially me inside of a truck with a real truck driver using his real words to kind of find out if it's as bad as I've always told it was. And it's a show that explores the career you don't go down, pathways, like sacrifice. You know, there's so much that's involved with our careers and our passions and what we do for love.
Wow. Now, this is not the first time you've staged it, is it?
No. We've been really lucky to have such great reception. And it was originally programmed at Bats Theatre in the Tahi Festival in September 2025 last year. Had a really cool run and got some awesome kind of response and accolades. And so we put it on for one night at the Hannah. And now we're ready to take it to Kew Theatre and you know, reach a whole new city and a whole new audience.
And have you made tweaks and changes since its 2025 premiere?
I think there's been very small adjustments that feel huge to the director and I, and very minor probably to the rest of the audience. But if anything, it's just tightening of gags and changing a lot of pretty much as myself, Jackson, speaking on stage, and then there's Murphy, the truck driver. The only thing we've really changed is some of the waffle that Jackson says. We haven't really changed all of the gems that our truck driver has been talking about.
That's cool. Now, you said you grew up in this trucking world. So what's been your family's feedback on the show?
Oh, they have been, yeah. I think they were pretty nervous watching it. And I think that's probably the most nervous I've been watching it or doing the show with, you know, it's a story about me and it's about me. And so I think having them and the truck driver in the audience at the same time was, yeah, thrilling, and I was shaking pretty much. So very, very exciting show, but they loved it, and I think it was a really, really special show for them. They really enjoyed it, and they really got it, of course. It's about me, and it's kind of indescribable, that kind of feeling of how special something can be for someone who's so connected to you, seeing you do a show about you. It's crazy, but it happened, and it's very special.
Did it open up any conversations, like maybe they didn't know parts of you, that it was a little bit like, well, now we understand a bit more? Did those things happen?
Yeah, I think it was less. I think they've really they really understand what I do now and my passion. I think when I was probably in college and I was saying, like, I think I want to be an actor, I think they were probably like, okay, let's see where that goes. And so it's kind of it's a hard career to go down. And so over the past few years, I think they've been really supportive and really have grown to understand this love and passion of mine. And so I think this was kind of just a cherry on top for them. I think it was just kind of solidified that you're doing the right thing, and this is what you were meant to do, and you weren't meant to drive trucks or do anything else. I've been very grateful. They've never really doubted what I want to do. I think they've just seen the passion and love for it, and they're like, well, if you have that in you, follow that. So I think if anything, it just kind of, yeah, was the kind of cherry on top. And I think they just really loved it, honestly. I think they really loved seeing me as a truck driver in a way, because I never did that. And so this is like a time for them to be like, what would it have looked like or felt like as, you know, Jackson being a truck driver?
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest takeaway.
I wonder if they hear any lines on the radio now that they go, oh, we should give this to Jackson for the next script. Like, are they helping you create version two?
Oh, my dad feels like my producer sometimes now. I feel like he is, like, sending me ideas or, like, hey, let's do it here. And he's still really connected with the trucking community. And I think he's, like, you know, a dream of ours. You know, my director and producer and mine is to take this show directly to those truck driving communities, the small towns, put it on, you know, a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, in a kind of stripped back tech version, and bring the art directly to those communities who don't maybe get to experience art. So that's definitely a dream of ours looking forward. And I think my dad's really on the ground doing those, doing that work of like, hey, there's an awesome pub in this town. I just went past, and they're super keen to have you on board. So I'm sure we'll get more and more connected.
Great idea.
You know, get on the ground and you know, to those communities directly.
Great idea.
Because it's not very long, so it would be very easy to pack up and go to the next and keep people engaged and excited especially if it's a kind of a first entry to the arts and something that's relatable for them. It seems like a really good bridge.
Yeah, because it kind of bridges the pathway, like literally, between acting and trucking. And so, like, within the show, I kind of explain parts of the performance that I'm doing. So I think for those people who are maybe experiencing this for the first time, it's a really great way for you to understand the work. And I think there's a kind of double layer there of it can be quite funny seeing someone over explain performing arts to people who get it. So, yeah, it's very fun. It's very fun to get that mixed audience of people who appreciate the explaining and then some people who are cracking up because it's maybe obvious or they hear this all the time. Or yeah. So it would be a great show for people to experience as well. And I feel like you're way more invited when you know the character
that's
on the stage. So to taking it to those communities, it's someone that, you know, people know and recognize, and I think they're really... They're listening way more, and they're leaning into that kind of story. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Tell us about how it works with Simon as director, because obviously you've created this piece, but you're gifting it to somebody to then direct you back in it. What's that experience like? You must have an awesome amount of trust and collaboration together.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been really lucky to work with Simon in other shows and as a director and as a castmate and even a writer. So I had complete trust in him in terms of the craft of this show. And it being a solo show, it requires a different type of director. There's less kind of ensemble and kind of, I mean, for this show at least, we wanted to keep it very minimalistic for touring purposes and keeping it simple. Like, it's me in a chair with a cap and a few items around me. Like, it's very minimalistic. So having someone like Simon, an incredible actor and artist and director, it was almost like a kind of, we were working this together like an acting coach, kind of working this kind of stand-up comedy set at times. Like, it was a really unique way of working, but it felt so personal. He has he's worked with Verbatim before, and so this being my first time, I felt in really great hands to certain techniques and ways to kind of understand the character and go into his voice and physicality. And yeah, Simon's just kind of an expert in that, in my eyes. So I felt a huge amount of trust, and then I also felt he knew nothing about truck driving, so it was a really cool way of like him teaching me, me teaching him, and us kind of find this really lovely middle ground.
Did you take him out on a truck?
We didn't go on a truck trip together, no, but we kind of like, you know, talked about our experiences. And like, I think he grew up in Timaru, and so like he was he was like, I think there's actually a truck driver in my family, and like went down this kind of route of maybe there's truck driving in him. And yeah, it was very fun to try and find the connections at least.
Brilliant. All right, where can people head for tickets and all the important dates and information?
Amazing. So Q Theatre, we're performing at Q Theatre Loft on the 4th to the 8th of August, 7 p.m. And just head to Q Theatre's website and, you know, you'll see my face or my face twice. And you'll see me giving a thumbs up, so you'll know you're in the right place.
That is awesome. Kristen, I think we're going to spend most of August at Q Theatre Loft. It seems to be so much on there that we want to see.
Maybe they'll give us our own seats.
Yeah, so we have our kick-out seats.
I want a hat.
Jackson, thanks for chatting to us once again. Good luck with the season. We'll try and catch it. Head to qtheatre.co.nz, everybody. Go and support this wonderful piece of work. Over and out. Thanks, Jackson. Take care.
Hey, thank you guys so much.
Awesome. Appreciate it. We'll take
a quick
music break now. Here's Hordy Shaw with Ready to Ride, and then we're going to get the studio ready for a band who are going to play us some live music out for the rest of the evening. Take it away. Here's Ready to Ride.
Through the native, I feel at home.
Ready to ride. Well, Kristen, we have had a varied night of music and guests tonight.
We are so cultured.
So cultured, and it sounds like we're going to spend most of August at the Q Theatre.
I'm so excited.
We've got a busy week this week because we're off supporting AMT, we're off supporting MPA. It's all happening up here in Auckland. Of course, if you've got something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. We love chatting music, theatre, books, arts, events, anything. Tell us. Come on and talk about it so that we can promote you around the country. Now, we're taking a music shift now for the rest of the evening, and a big welcome into the studio, Josh Cooper and Sam from No Strangers. Evening, team.
Hey, how's it going?
We're good, thank you. How are you guys?
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, great.
Good. All right. So, Josh, tell us, what is No Strangers? Who is No Strangers? And how long has it been around?
Well, we have been together, the three of us currently, for a couple of years. But the band as a whole started a bit before I joined on.
Lockdown, yeah.
Okay.
Sudden lockdown.
So who originally formed it?
It was me. I played guitar when I was a kid.
Yep.
And I kind of dragged Cooper into it playing drums.
Okay.
And I had a mate and I taught him bass and he joined us. He's no longer in the band, but...
So yeah. Where did the name No Strangers came from? Was that because they all had to be connected to you?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I forced it. No, it actually started because we just really didn't want a the name. There's too many of those bands around, I think. Yeah, but a brainstorming and No Strangers what came out.
Yeah, we really were forced into it. We had to start making Instagram accounts and, you know, doing gigs.
Forced to pick a name.
Yeah, really just kind of forced into it.
Okay, and how would you describe your style of music?
Or frantic?
Frantic. Okay, Kristen, we need to brace ourselves.
I know, we might need a chamomile tea later.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Frantic?
I don't know. A bit of, you know, all the bands we really enjoy. So, bit of early on, we got a lot of Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Lots of words.
Yeah.
Very vocabulary heavy, dense, you could say.
A lot of changes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we like music that changes a lot, lots of different parts.
Okay.
Keep things interesting, hopefully.
And do you enjoy performing live, or do you like sort of jamming on your own or recording as well? Or is it everything at the moment?
Yeah, a bit of everything. We've just really gotten into doing recording, so we're doing it all ourselves now, which is really cool. So we're doing all the recording. I'm doing production and mastering and everything. So it's pretty exciting. We've got like lots of new music we're starting to make. It's coming out soon.
Do you tend to just write and perform your own songs, or do you sometimes do covers if you're at events, etc.?
I think it varies. Like, I think more and more now that we're in a three-piece and you're writing music for a three-piece, we tend to do more of our own stuff now, and it kind of depends on the gig.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we enjoy the most.
We have a decent catalogue of our own songs. That would be like,
we do get told
songs
that,
or so?
That our covers, our own songs are better than the covers.
That's good.
I don't know whether it's just because
the heart's hunting it.
Yeah, we're not doing it as well as the cover should be done. but yeah, our own song's a lot more fun.
You can mess up a cover, but you can't mess up your own song if nobody's heard it before.
Yeah, they don't have anything to compare it to.
Trying something new this time.
So, Josh, there's so many Kiwi artists and Kiwi bands out there at the moment. How do you sort of strive, I guess, to get yourself out there in the world and make yourself known for it?
There's a lot of socializing going on in, like, the actual, what they call the scene, when you're at the gigs. But the main thing, of course, is social media, which we really struggle with. But, you look at the big bands coming up, like the Boondocks.
Yeah.
Always got, like, a really heavy
I do
presence
think
online.
Probably more now than ever with, you know, like such a big rise of AI and sort of you don't know where your music's coming from necessarily. So much like importance on live music, you know, when you can go to a venue and you can see these geezers just like smashing out a song they've written. I think that's, for me, that is like the most important thing. You know, that's where you can really connect with the band.
So what made you decide now's the time to start recording and releasing music?
We've written so many songs now that they have this like very clear direction, and that they've got all this kind of, I guess, this emotion like or feeling. It's all realigned, and we've got this idea for an album that's like sort of a concept album, and it's based around kind of like a night out with mates, and it tells stories through that, you know, through these kind of like throwaway situations or moments. It's like all these feelings entwined in that, and kind of like your early 20s, late teens, sort of working out life, like who you are, who your mates are and stuff like that. And it just feels like quite like a cohesive sort of album, hopefully.
I like that, because we've had a few groups come in where, you know, they've written songs about different journeys in their life, but together on an album, it kind of hasn't made sense. It makes sense to them. This feels like it has a little bit more cohesion.
And has a kind of a, like you said, a story or a journey for a group of mates, which is really important nowadays, especially after the pandemic, to then come out with an album that says, hey, we're doing it together, and it's not just my journey and your journey and your journey, it's our journey. I think that's what's really needed. Mm. I think that's the beauty of Kiwi music, is it is more storytelling and more journeys, and keeping it that authenticity, which is why it's more fun to play your own music.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
You said it started in lockdown. Mm. So was that you guys in a garage illegally playing music, or were you on Zoom playing together?
They're not going to tell their secrets.
Well, we're brothers.
Yeah. So, we're brothers. Okay, yeah. I didn't know. Well, then that helps.
So,
And it was actually like, I think, very cool story. I actually broke my leg just before lockdown.
Ow.
And like my favorite thing to do was to play football, but with this broken leg I kind of just had to sit around, you know, and you can't go see mates or anything. So I picked up the guitar again after I played it as a kid, and I learned, man, you can actually like write your own songs and like say things. So yeah, that like really like propelled us into this.
Yeah, because it was right before the second lockdown, I believe, and because we'd both played like growing up. And you know how it is, as a little kid, you're not really, you don't always get along with your brother. So that was, we had a few like arguments, and it wasn't that cohesive, you know, when I was about 11 years old. But we was about like 18 or so back in yeah, a long time ago now. So that's when we kind of gave it a second go. And then, yeah, went straight into that lockdown, and then I couldn't play football either. So that was kind of just how it happened in our garage. Yeah, it was great.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. So that...
We're very lucky to play at my parents' house in Drury. So we actually had feedback in the last couple of months. Because, you know, garage doors open all the time, pretty loud. We've had people walking past, and they're like, hey, like... We heard you guys, you know, like 2 years ago when you started, and I've got to say, you sound a lot better now.
Brilliant. You need a little, like, you know, QR code down at the letterbox. If you like our music, scan here to download. Yeah, as you're walking by. Now, you are sitting on a drum. Now, most people, when they bring drums in here, they don't sit on them. So tell us, what sort of drum is this?
Well, I'm not usually a cajon guy, but it's a little box you can kind of carry around. It's a lot more mobile than my usual kit, so...
Portable percussion.
Yeah, exactly.
Portable percussion, I love it.
Yeah, because usually it's a bit of a task getting the drums around, so it's nice you can kind of just pick it up and move it anywhere. You
Brilliant.
Know?
Maybe next time get the full kit in.
Because you're also the singer, too, so it must be a relaxation to say, here's a box, now I can sing, and not all the, you know... putting on the cymbals and all the tweaking of it.
Yeah, I do a little bit of backing, so I won't claim to be a great singer. Maybe you'll hear. But yeah, well, it is quite nice, you know. It is a little less comfortable to, you know, there's nothing like sitting behind a drum kit, but it's pretty good.
Sitting on it. All right, well, we're going to play your first track, which is Perth. Tell us about that, and as you tell us, we're going to move some mics around, so cool. I'm just going to mute every other mic, but you fill us in. What's Perth all about?
Cool. Perth is not necessarily about one specific place, namely Perth. It's more about... I guess like looking back on something you miss, and yeah, I like Perth. The title of the song, that's kind of what it represents in our song.
And when did you create this one?
This is one of the later songs we've written. It's it came off. I think we were playing at like a party for our mate, just in our own house, and it was jammed over like three chords, and I came up with lots of very fast words to sing over it, and maybe in the last like 4 months, 3 months, something like that.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to do some jiggling of microphones, and then they'll take it away. We'll try and mix this. We've never had a drum like this in before, so audience listening, good luck. I'll be watching my levels. We'll see how it goes. Take it away.
Oh, graffiti streets for 908. So I got dressed up to meet the streets, and I laughed so well they invite me in. Just trying to move these feet, and the girls will ask me where I've been. Coming back for you. I'll be coming back for you. I'll be coming back for you. Little girl, I'll be coming back for you.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I doubt we'll
be coming back for you. I'll be coming back for you. I'll be coming back for you, little girl. I'll be coming back for you. Buttercup, don't leave me on the street. Across the sea, I've known you for a lifetime, baby. Bottle cap, don't leave me on the street. Bottle cap, don't leave. They're telling me it's on time, girl. I'll be walking with you, either way it goes, babe.
Woo! Just trying to get our microphones back because we fired them all around the room. Well done, team. That is nice.
Cheers.
Josh, do you also sing?
I do, yes. We all three of us sing very differently.
Yeah.
So depending on the mood of the song we're singing, we'll change it up. For this current album, Sam writes the majority of our songs and the majority of the lyrics, so it's kind of his perspective. So
nice.
This album is pretty much all with his main vocal.
You guys are good on your instruments, though. That was a good sound.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well done.
Shout out to the cajon man.
Yeah, they did the
not
trick.
Not my usual thing. But,
it only gave me 3 alerts that we went over the limits for radio, so that wasn't too bad. So we did well. Yeah. Nice. So in between gigs, are you now sort of trying to write the next music? Like, what's the journey at the moment looking like?
I actually, like, writing is it doesn't really come into like a job. I don't have to think about doing it. I tend to just write lots of stuff. Not always good, but
is there a lot on the cutting room floor?
Yeah. I'd say I've written like 3 albums worth of songs so far. I'd say I've got maybe like 30 songs that I think I'd like to play as a band at some point. But I guess the cool thing is that this first album is kind of all the first stuff we've written and played together. So by the time we get to our second one, hopefully, we'd be better at playing instruments and playing together. So it'd be better music.
So, Josh, what was it like joining this band of brothers?
So when I first joined on, Luke was still in the band. So there was actually 4 of us for a year or so. But it was, a very interesting experience for me. I didn't really know Cooper at all before joining. I didn't know Luke. I don't think I'd even met him before. Sam and I were flatmates, so that's how we still are flatmates, still living together. That's how we kind of got into it. It's been great.
And is music in your background as well? Like, did you...
Similar story to Sam. So I played guitar when I was a kid, kind of fell out of love with it as you get older and other things become your priority. But it's been brilliant to get back into it.
I love that it is acoustic and with the, even with the percussion box, that is so refreshing nowadays when things are going to, extra synth, extra, electronica, to have this, not as frantic as I thought. Like,
no.
I was like, this is actually very easy driving music, maybe, for the truck driving.
Definitely, yeah, we could send it to Jackson. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have quite a mix of music? Like, do you have your slower ones, you're more frantic than others, or is that kind of the bar where you like it to be?
That is, I'd say, like, ironically, that is our most, like, poppy song we've got, which is funny because it is the first one we've recorded and put out, but it's certainly, like, I guess it doesn't encapsulate our sound fully. Yeah, we tend to be a little bit, like, faster and heavier, not heavier, but like a bit more gritty.
Yeah, probably. I guess the way we just described our music 5 minutes ago was nothing like the song we just played.
Okay, that's
right. We've got time for another one. the world of music videos, like everything we get sent now is always YouTube clips, etc. Is that where you're heading as well? Do you need to start thinking, okay, we're releasing the song now, we've got to think about the video?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there's a big difference, at least for us, because we have been playing music a long time as a band, and like you're pretty comfortable doing that, and it's something like pretty new, you know, like you've even just doing the whole recording process is like pretty new. And then yeah, it's definitely something we think about, and like we'll just do as the same things always, just learn as we go. I'm getting like pretty good ideas.
It is
going. So
I think we're primarily people that want to be in a garage playing real loud or on a stage playing real loud. So it's certainly like a step out of our comfort zone to be trying to make like videos and content like that.
But hey, you know, pick a mountain, set yourself up, film it, and you know, play music loud in a park somewhere or something like that. Yeah, that's all the video needs to be. But yeah, it's definitely the way, isn't it? Everything we're getting now.
Which would definitely be like kind of 90s-esque, right? When they're at the top of the roof or, you know, those sweeping now with drones, right? It could be something very natural. Yeah, and really compelling.
All right, we're going to do the mic shuffle again, and you're going to play us Airway Shuffle. Josh, what's this one about?
Well, following on from the theme of a night out, this one is about an Uber drive.
An Uber drive? Ooh, okay. Yeah,
follow along with the lyrics if you can.
Yeah, exciting Uber drives are.
All right, and who's singing this one, just so we get our mics right? Just you?
Yes.
All right, no pressure. We'll get everything ready. Take it away with the Airway Shuffle.
Changed from green to red. I light a cigarette and crank up my FM. Lisa says money spent. I say a prayer for my God and my unborn child, yeah. I'd say yawn and flick to green. I find some rage for another man's harmless dream. Owns invaded, staring at pavement. I like the way he says it on the station, yeah. Sicky, nothing but these four wheels. If I'm drunk with me, man, I don't want your pity. Hear it on the airwave chatter, the airwave chatter. Yeah, life and that sea, man, is sicky. Nothing but these four wheels. If I'm drunk with me, man, I don't want your pity. Hear it on the airwave chatter, the airwave chatter. They change. You're pulling levers, switching lanes. Walk the concrete, kiss the change. I refrain and cruise the street of hate and pain. And hate and pain. And pain and pain and pain and pain. And pain and yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, life and I see you. Sicky, nothing but these four wheels. Some junk with me, and I don't want your pity. Mirror on the airwave chatter,
water. Your life in the sea, man, is sicky. Nothing but these four wheels. Some drunk swimming, man, I don't want your pity. We're on the airwaves, the airwaves. And Digo ties the laces of those hearts that wish for love. I see your pretty colours and only wish for them to dull. A bird nest by the cab rank, fast asleep, head full of dreams. I open up my window and now my hatred for its beak. Yeah.
Beautiful. Airway Shuffle. No Strangers. Fantastic. You like your long intros, guys. So, what's next? What's the plans for the rest of 2026?
More gigs. Yeah.
What have you got coming up?
What are we doing?
Great question. Do we have anything?
We've got one we're looking at. I think it was going to be the end of this month, but it might end up being next month. We're playing with another band we have played with a few times before.
YFY. Little shout out to them.
Nice. Yeah, cool. Down south as well.
So we're seeing so many Kiwi bands now headline other international artists when they come in here, which is fantastic. Going down the line now, if there was a dream band or performer, anyone that you could be like, hey, we'll play first, who would it be?
Who's here? Like dead or alive or...
Yeah. Anyone. Ideally alive. Ideally, okay. You know, making wishes here.
Yeah. Play with the band. That's
yeah.
Look good compared to them, though.
Who would you love to headline for?
I personally, the Strokes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about them that you love?
They recently played like a big set at Coachella. Do you know the music festival Coachella? And I thought it was like terrific. It had really cool, like powerful political message for their last song. So. Yeah, I really like their, like, the use of their, like, big platform to, like, spread, a good message.
Yeah, nice. Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. What about you, sir?
If I can't also say the Strokes, I would probably say Queens of the Stone Age, which I think Cooper was going to say anyway. We all have very similar music tastes. Queens of the Stone Age, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Cooper?
Oh, that's two good picks already. I don't know. There's a few... Queens of the Stone Age are probably one of the best bands I've seen live as well. Super, like, just motivating to watch. So they're like, pretty inspiring. Maybe in Arctic Monkeys. I mean, that's, okay. Like, been a favourite for...
Yeah.
You know, like...
get him out of retirement. You could play after us.
Bring him back.
Yeah.
That's right. We were talking last week about Air Supply coming back for their 50th... tour, so you know you can still play when you're 80. Like, get them back.
Yeah, they might need an opening band.
Can you imagine? Imagine these guys kicking off Air Supply. That'd be brilliant.
I think it would set a nice tone.
Civic Theatre, good space.
Yeah,
their noise. All right, let's send them a message. We'll support them. Where can people follow you, find you, listen to your music, and all that important stuff, Josh?
Instagram at _no_strangers_. We're on Spotify and all the good places people stream music, but our main content we post on Instagram.
Great. And, is that a big thing now, starting to think about where you post and how often? Are you getting down that path now?
We keep telling each other that we need to start posting, and we don't.
Got to give the people what they want,
Yeah.
Kids know what they want, and it's Instagram reels.
We just get people knocking on our door now, asking, when's the next gig, when's the next song coming out, so...
And it doesn't have to be polished, right? A lot of that Instagram music that I'm discovering is just people, just bands sitting around and playing the music, right? Those live reels and stuff. So it doesn't have to be all buttoned up and perfect, because that's really the experience that they're going to have when they come see you, right? It's just going to be real and raw. And that is, then it's always like, if you're seeing this, please pass on to your friends, or, your algorithm is... has brought you to us. So it, it's it wouldn't have to be too much of an effort. Be great to see it.
Well, we are out of time for the show. You are going to play us out with one of your favorites, Rip Tilia. Who wrote this?
Julian Casablancas of The Strokes.
The Strokes. Good old The Strokes. Kristen and I are checking out a number of different Auckland theatre things this week. We've got a busy week. Emma is checking out Australian theatre this week with the Junior Theatre Festival. So wherever you are, have a fabulous week and make sure you
kick some arts.
Take it away, guys.
Saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art.